You found it. The best place for live, local, conservative talk in the morning. The Commute with Carlson. Stimulating, entertaining, and making a difference. Here's John Carlson on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
The asylum, citizenship, freedom, opportunity, and even welfare. And how did they thank us? With bombs.
That pretty much sums it up. Greta Van Susteren. John Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is 5 minutes after six. That was a reference to the Tsarnaev family. Both of the Boston Marathon bombers' parents received welfare benefits when the boys were growing up. And then the older of the boy, Tamerlan, the firebrand militant who went back to Dagestan in 2012, he was living on welfare for a while as well. The Massachusetts Office of Health and Human Services said that their welfare benefits ended in 2012 when the couple no longer met the income eligibility limits. What's interesting about all this is you have to wonder about the mentality of people who come to America ostensibly for freedom and end up on welfare. And then their kids grow up and they go to one of the best public schools in Boston, a charter school. Ringe Latin is the name of it. That's where Ben Affleck went to school. And then the younger of the boys gets a scholarship, $2,500 scholarship to University of Massachusetts Dartmouth. And everywhere you look, this society is doing things for them that they could never hope to get in, well, in Chechnya or Dagestan or in most other places. Where did all this extremism come from? Well, relatives say that Tamerlan Tsarnaev, that's the black hat, aviator sunglasses, the guy who's 26 years old, the guy who's now dead, reminds me, his dad's got to come to America and claim his body. It's still literally on ice. But anyway, and the father is expected here tomorrow, along with the mother. And we've already heard a little bit from the mom here. But Tamerlan's descent into extreme Islam began as early as 5 years ago when he met a convert and began to become more devout, sought out jihad and conspiracy theory websites, checked out the rabidly anti-Semitic propaganda tract called The Protocols of the Elders of Zion. And many people say that it is his mother who was really the gateway to his militants. In fact, his uncle says that the mother began weaving conspiracy theories about 9/11 when she would talk to her cosmetology clients. And she had learned this from her son. So the mother and the son were kind of egging on each other's extremism. Now, what is interesting at this point is that, you know, we hear that the system worked. But you know what we're really learning here? The Boston Marathon bombing happened in part because the system did not work. We were clued in by the Russian government about Tamerlan Tsarnaev's extremism and his descent into Islamist ideology. So the FBI goes to interview Tamerlan, and they cleared him. And so after they cleared Tamerlan, the Russians went to the CIA. And the CIA got basically the same information from them. So the Russian government was concerned enough about this guy. They'd bring the information to the FBI. And I'd mentioned on last Friday's show, I believe, that the FBI is really hamstrung by official policy, hamstrings FBI agents and tries to keep them away from lines of questioning that presume Islamist extremism. And, you know, a lot of field agents are just going to, blow that off and do what they think is right. But that didn't happen with Tamerlan. Its agents asked Tamerlan if he was a terrorist. He said, no, I'm not a terrorist. So the Bureau said they couldn't find any evidence that he was, so they closed his case. And the Russians, again, come back and this time try and interest the CIA in this guy. So the Russians repeatedly were trying to warn us about him. Now we learn that the FBI says it didn't know about Tamerlan Tsarnaev's trip to Dagestan the following year. So, again, here's the timeline. The FBI gets a tip from the Russians in March of 2011. The FBI says its investigation turned up nothing. And the following year, Tamerlan, January of 2012, travels to Dagestan for about 6 months. Janet Napolitano said that the Department of Homeland Security knew that Tamerlan had left for Dagestan. So, Department of Homeland Security knew, but the FBI did not. And apparently, the Department of Homeland Security didn't tell the FBI or the CIA. Now, when Tamerlan came back from Dagestan, he had been delisted from Homeland Security's enforcement communication system. So they didn't know when he came back. You know what I'm wondering right now? So my point to you here is that they should have been surveilling this guy. And in fact, Department of Homeland Security did have him on a watch list. But DHS and FBI apparently weren't communicating. So I would love to know a couple of things. First of all, I'd love to know more about that FBI investigation that said, no problems here, no threats, no danger. Now, just because the Russian government tells us that he's a problem doesn't mean that we should immediately assume he's planning a terror strike. The Russians might have motives of their own, which is, hey, this guy is in America and he's making trouble in Dagestan and Chechnya, and we don't need any more headaches like that in our country. So tell the Americans that this guy's an extremist and could be a threat. That might have been the mentality that the FBI carried into their interview, that they were skeptical about whether the Russians were exaggerating or not. But if you look at some of the websites and some of the comments made by this guy, it's clear that he's a nut. I mean, he was kicked out of a mosque in Cambridge for being a nut. So I would love to know more about that FBI investigation. I'd love to know what prompted that tip from the Russians as well. So, you know, that is one update. This notion that, you know, we're working seamlessly and with synergy as a team. Well, maybe after the bombs went off, everybody was working together. The question is, were we working together before it happened? And the answer is no. The FBI dropped the ball on this one. And it's not clear who, and it's not clear why, but it happened. So, and you by now have heard that the moment that he was read his rights yesterday, Jokar, the surviving brother, has clammed up. He's no longer saying anything. Investigators had interviewed, interrogated him for about 16 hours. And then a magistrate judge and a representative from the U.S. Attorney's Office entered his hospital room and formally issued him his Miranda warning. He had been talking up to that point. As soon as they issued him his rights, he said, "I'm no longer interested in talking." So, boy, how much more information could we have gotten from him before that happened? Keep in mind something else. Again, the FBI was tipped off by the Russians. They interviewed him, said no problem here. The CIA got a tip from the Russians. They looked into it, and they named Tamerlan to a terrorist database a year and a half ago. And the Department of Homeland Security had its system pinged when Tamerlan left in early 2012 for Dagestan. And yet he had been delisted by the time he came back. Why on earth would you be delisted while you're in a hotbed of Islamic extremism like Dagestan? So all sorts of questions here about, was he, you know, the early reports were, geez, you know, you can't keep an eye on every immigrant who comes from an area where there's, you know, unrest and uprisings among the Islamic population, for crying out loud. But now it's becoming clear that this guy was singled out and apparently, for one reason or another, was not taken as seriously by some people in the federal government as others were taking him. You got 17 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. John Carlson here, Talk Radio 570 KVI.
We've got to stick together. Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Coming up on 6:23, John Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Yeah! Greg Gutfeld from Fox News, co-host of The Five, the lead host, really, a trailblazer on the Red Eye program as well, gives a great summation of how both the left and right try to explain the Boston bombing suspects. Boy, is this ever helpful.
So, after every terror attack, each motive shall be discussed but one. It is the terror that dares not speak its name. Well, actually, it does speak. Our media just won't hear it. Instead, we explore the pain of the poor thugs, which could be why some terrorists get movies made by Robert Redford and others get tenure. So what do hacks do when they're wrong about terror? They cling to relativism. Yep, Muslim extremism is no different than any other extremism. But in order to make that stick, you gotta suck at math. Muslim versus Christian extremism is not apples to apples. It's comparing Hurricane Katrina to a squirt gun, which is why they embrace root causes, the detached response to evil. Let's simply focus on the personal turmoil of the bombers, not the real turmoil they cause. But this head shrinking only benefits the killer while energizing attention-craving copycats. It also drowns out compassion for the victims. So we spend less time trying to stop evil and more time trying to understand it. We become the Clarissa to their Hannibal. Our obsession with their death inevitably makes them more appealing. But all root causes can be destroyed in one sentence. A lot of people don't fit in and still don't blow people up. We all don't wage jihad when we're sad. Bottom line, the punk placed a bomb next to a child. Why will not change that fact? So what if we made a pact not to discuss these idiots or show their stupid faces? Enough egging on these creeps. Those who traffic in root causes pretend to inform us, but they're simply diluting our condemnation of horror. Like singer Amanda Palmer, who wrote a love poem to the terrorist instead of writing one for the victims. What a hopeless loser. Maybe she'll marry the guy. Look, these bombers show how easy it is to upend society, but what their apologists suggest is far worse, that a life of obscurity is inferior to a life of infamy, and that terror is a lifestyle choice.
Well said, because it is important for people to understand what it is that we are up against. And the first thing he said is, you know, we're looking at every motive except one. One of the reasons for this reticence is political correctness. Another is that the president of the United States himself seems tongue-tied when it comes to explaining what the war on terror is really a war against.
I say I don't know what he's thinking.
This is Charles Krauthammer.
But I sure know what he's saying and doing. The lengths to which he will go to avoid telling us the truth about the enemy is becoming comical. It's certainly embarrassing. For example, he will never forget about that we use the word jihadist. He'll never use that. But he refuses to use the word Islamist, which is used throughout the Muslim world. It's used by journalists, by authors, on the street, in the parliament, everywhere in Egypt. It's used in Lebanon. It's used everywhere by Muslims. And yet Obama won't touch it because he refuses to use any words that might imply a connection between radical Islam and terrorism, which, as anybody who's over the age of 9 knows, is the single greatest cause of terror in the world today.
And yet Obama, who let us all agree, is a very gifted speaker, sharp, crisp, articulate when he wants to be eloquent at moments, can't bring himself to say this. Now, why does this even matter? It matters because when you are up against, when you are asking your countrymen to support something, they need to know in no uncertain terms what it is this fight is all about. And Barack Obama can make it very clear. We are fighting a war on terrorism that springs from Islamic extremism. There, boom, that quick. We are engaged in an ongoing war against terrorism that springs from Islamic extremism. Every word I just said is absolutely true, absolutely accurate. And anyone who would complain about that is probably on the other side. And if they're not, then they are thoroughly morally confused. The reason why this matters, again, is that America needs to rally around this cause. If anything changes because of Boston, it ought to be that the war is going to come here regardless of what we are doing. Now, we have pulled almost all troops out of Iraq. We have drawn down in Afghanistan. And anyone who follows the news knows that we're heading out of Afghanistan. And yet, what was the supposed motive for blowing up people at the Boston Marathon? Well, first it was Islam, and then it was Iraq and Afghanistan. The common root here, of course, is Islamic jihad against that which threatens the caliphate. And nothing threatens the caliphate more than the United States in particular, the West in general, being a more desirable model for people to live. So this is more important than it's receiving in terms of news coverage. And we need to make clear exactly what it is we're fighting. Here's Joe Biden at a funeral service in Massachusetts for Sean Collier, the slain MIT police officer.
Why? Whether it's Al-Qaeda Central out of the Fatah or two twisted, perverted, cowardly knockoff jihadis here in Boston. Why do they do what they do?
Because they're committed to Islamic jihad. Say it for crying out loud. It's true. It's obvious. And it's enraging that they simply won't say what everyone already knows.